You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, NL Central Edition. Teams are not only in camp, but on the field. It's been great to see them out of the gate. Nobody playing better right now than the Pirates. Their pitching has been terrific, and they start the spring with a string of 8 errorless games. Don't know if I've ever seen that, but that's why we come out and watch these games. Can't wait to see where the spring training goes from here. As always, joined by the early awaking, early arising Jen Langosh. How you doing, Jen?
I'm good. Fighting some allergies, so I apologize for my voice. But other than that, doing quite well.
Have you seen any big lizards or anything else that would say Florida in the springtime?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm actually training for a half marathon while I'm down here, so every night when I go and run, it's basically an obstacle course of lizards, dodging lizards. So it makes for a little more entertainment in an otherwise mundane run, but certainly enjoying the weather. And actually, hard to believe I've already been down here almost a month.
Yeah, exactly right. When last we left off on our last podcast, Adam Wainwright had just gone to see the doctors, and it seems like since then it's got to be some feeling of relief in the Cardinals camp, not just Adam Wainwright, but Michael Wacha pitching very well to start his spring. So how about Wainwright and Wacha? I know Wainwright's actually getting close to getting on a mound and facing hitters in a game somewhere.
Yeah, you know, and when it comes to his arm strength and all that, he's right on par to actually where he probably should be at this time of spring. Really, the only limitations he still has are with running, mobility, and fielding things. And certainly, you know, the Cardinals are not going to throw him into a Grapefruit League start if he's not yet ready to field, to hop off the mound, react, that sort of thing. So really that's what they're waiting for. At this point, though, he threw a live batting practice session over the weekend. That went really well through 2 simulated innings in that. Through a bullpen session back in camp on Tuesday. And I would imagine that he'll have another live BP later this week, then eyeing hopefully getting into his first game next week. So, you know, again, the fact that he's been able to continue throwing and hasn't had to stop that at any point during this certainly bodes well for him being ready for the regular season, even if he's only able to get, which would probably be as most as 3 Grapefruit League appearances.
I'm sure he's anxious to get to Wrigley Field and look around and see what it looks like without fans in the bleachers.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be an interesting opening night. I mean, goodness, think of the storylines. Wrigley Field without all its seats, John Lester against Adam Wainwright, you know, certainly for the Cardinal fans, Jason Mott being on the other side Sunday night, it certainly sets up to be a big affair there in Chicago. And, you know, Wainwright is kind of trying to take things one day at a time, but you know that he wants to pitch that game against John Lester and is going to try to do everything he can to be that guy on that night.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be an electric night, I think. The Michael Wacha, his start of the spring, did that kind of create some 2013 flashbacks for Michael Wacha, or do we have to kind of take it easy with our expectations?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that we can expect him to be the October 2013 version of Michael Wacha. I mean, that was certainly pretty special, but a lot to like from what we've seen early in camp from Michael so far. I mean, first off, he's healthy, which is certainly a good sign. You know, he had an injury last year that's still pretty rare in this game, and the Cardinals, you know, took a long time trying to get a grasp of how to treat it, not only how to treat it at the time, but then also how to prevent it moving forward. But he feels really good. The shoulder is fine, so that does not seem to be a concern. And then just watching him pitch in his first Grapefruit League start, he just looks good. His fastball, his changeup was very good for an early March appearance. And kind of that downward movement that he has on his pitches, that downward trajectory that makes him so hard to hit, that's back. And that's something that we didn't see with regularity last year that we did in 2013. And, you know, you have to wonder if kind of his shoulder strength being compromised last year, if that was one of the reasons we didn't see his pitches with that unique movement that he came up with. So certainly an encouraging sign from him this first time out. He'll have probably another 3 to 4 starts here this spring, but no reason not to believe that this can't be a guy that can pitch well at the top of the rotation.
Hey, Jen, backing up to the maybe some of the lack of movement last year, the shoulder strengthening, talking about in a rehab or just trying to get stronger?
Both. You know, since the shoulder injury, he has kind of taken on somewhat of a different workload in between starts in terms of weight training, strength training, and all this. So it was a matter of getting some of that shoulder strength back, but then also strengthening areas to prevent the injury from recurring again. So, you know, it was a situation last season where obviously he didn't stop pitching until June, but you do have to wonder April, May, and June, was there some atrophy there? Well, you know, was his shoulder deteriorating to the point that he just wasn't getting that downward trajectory with his pitches that makes him so effective? So, you know, the fact that he worked, you know, so hard to get back last season healthy and then this winter really bought into this program that the Cardinals have put him on, it seems to be at this point working out quite well for him.
And Lance Lynn, not to leave him off our health list, goes to the trainer's room after his first start, diagnosed with a hip flexor strain, set him behind a little bit, but of all these other things, this always just looked like a little blip, didn't it, Jen?
It does, and, you know, similar to Wainwright, it has nothing to do with his arm. So, you know, I think at this point in the year, if you can avoid any kind of injury that's going to affect you being able to pitch, you know, that's a positive. So, you know, Lance was ready to get out and throw the next day. Obviously, the Cardinals were not going to let him do that. They want to take this just very cautiously again because we have almost a month till opening day. His next start will certainly be pushed back to some degree. We don't know yet how far back it's going to be pushed and when he'll get back on the mound again. But, you know, he started off early enough that he could still theoretically probably make another three starts, which put him up to four for the spring instead of the five that he was scheduled for. So at this point, it doesn't seem to be any concern on the Cardinals' end, on Lance's end, that he'll be able to get ready for the start of the season. And you have to look at him. You know, if Wainwright's not ready for opening day, I think that's going to be Lance Lynn's assignment. So I would expect to see him back on the mound this week, throwing on the side, and we'll see him back in the game, I would imagine, next week.
And the roller coaster ride that was Trevor Rosenthal last year, 45 saves but 5.4 walks per nine innings. How has he looked this spring? And is he more around the strike zone? Is he, you know, pounding the strike zone? And are there any adjustments that the Cardinals could make, could help him make, any changes in pitch selection or anything that might zero him in a little? Because, you know, when he throws strikes, you know, he's not quite Craig Kimbrell, but he's sure not very far away either.
No, absolutely. You know, Trevor has pitched twice so far. His first appearance, which was last weekend, looks real good. Threw 12 pitches, 8 for strikes, pounded the strike zone, was aggressive from the get-go, opened it with a strikeout, looks real, real good. He pitched again on Tuesday, had a little more issue finding the strike zone, gave up a home run that actually, you know, cost the Cardinals the game. But still, again, I think his focus this spring, it's really quite simple. His focus this spring is to throw strikes, you know, and he looks back on last year, which was certainly a success. I mean, this is a guy who saved 45 of 51 games he had the opportunity to do so. But as he looks back, he noticed that he had gotten away from his strengths, which are pounding the strike zone and making hitters try to hit his best. And instead, he tried to nibble. He tried to pick at the corners. That's why we saw the walk rate go up so high. That's why we saw long counts. Extended innings. I mean, you think about how many innings he threw 20, 25 pitches to get through. Very, very common and way too common for a closer. So, you know, he just wants to get back to being the aggressor in that matchup. And I think the other thing he's looking to do is to change up his repertoire a little bit. Maybe, you know, he describes it as pitching backwards a little bit, maybe not starting out with that first pitch fastball all the time, using one of his off-speed pitches to kind of keep the batter fooled. Just try to show a little bit different look. Don't allow them to sit on what they know is coming. And then the other thing we've seen from him this spring is he's pitching exclusively out of the stretch. So that's something that the Cardinals think might benefit him. We will see if it's something he continues into the season. But to this point, again, through two appearances, one really good one, one pretty good one, he's looked good, and I think he's accomplishing what he hoped to this month.
Yeah, that's a big adjustment, going exclusively out of the stretch. We'll be very interested to keep an eye on that and see if that's a spring training thing or something that could carry over to the regular season. I'm looking forward to seeing the Cardinals. I'll see them later today for the first time this spring. I've been in Arizona for the most part. But looking at the box scores and the standings, it looks like the first week's probably been across the board basic Cardinal baseball, making the plays in the field, pitching well, but really not breaking out with the bats. And, I mean, it's silly to talk about any concerns this early in spring training, but what's going on with the hitters? Is there any general theme to what's kind of been a continuation, it seems like, of their 2014 struggles to score runs?
Yeah, you know, not so much. I mean, I think we're still at the point in spring a lot of times where the pitchers are still ahead of hitters for the most part. And, you know, a lot of the kind of the guys that are going to be the regulars in the Cardinals lineup at this point are only getting maybe 2 at-bats per game. So I'm not sure we can read too much into it. I think on the positive side, as you mentioned, we haven't seen a lot of power or even extra base hits from the regulars. We have seen some from the guys competing for bench spots, sort of Randall Grichuk, Tommy Pham. Seen a little bit of power from both of them. They've both gotten off to a really good start. And I think when you do look at kind of the projected eight for the Cardinals, the top three in the order, Matt Carpenter, Jason Hayward, and Matt Holliday, have each gotten off to pretty good starts. And, we've seen them play 5 games now together where they've hit 1, 2, 3, and it kind of has given the Cardinals a look of what that lineup could be come the regular season. So, even though the production isn't necessarily there, Cardinals like the look. I think the one guy who really needs a hit at this point is Colton Wong. You think back to the spring he had last year, starting out 0 for 10 and really putting a lot of pressure on himself. This year I believe he was 0 for 8 through his first couple starts. So, I know he wants to get going, but really no concern. I mean, we're still, 3.5 weeks away from opening day. So I think the Cardinals like the offense they have. They like the potential, and I don't think they want to read too much into what's gone on through the first 5, 6 games.
Yeah, what's been your quick take on Jason Hayward?
He has fit in here quite well, and he really, and I didn't see him in Atlanta, so I don't want to perceive what it was like with him in the Braves clubhouse, but he looks like a kid having a lot of fun playing the game of baseball. He's really assimilated into the clubhouse, found some good friends. He looks very comfortable hitting where he is in the Cardinals lineup. This is a guy who hasn't made it a secret that he really never felt comfortable as a leadoff hitter for Atlanta. And the Cardinals knew that and said, you don't have to do that here. We obviously have a guy in Matt Carpenter that can do that just fine. So, I think he's going to end up in that number 2 hole. It's been the only place he's hit so far this spring. So it certainly would seem an indication that that's where Mike Mussini would like to start him. And, in talking to Jason, for him, the opportunity to hit behind Matt Carpenter and ahead of Matt Holliday, he's looking forward to it. He's looking forward to that sort of protection. He's looking forward to maybe seeing the power come back that went away when he was a leadoff guy, and then also using his speed as a guy still near the top of the lineup. So I think it's been an excellent fit. We saw him make a terrific defensive play the other day, which kind of gave you, a glimpse of why this guy is a Gold Glove right fielder, which the Cardinals are, certainly there's value in that as well as what he can do offensively. But, when he's in the lineup, if you look at this lineup, there's just a depth to it that wasn't there last year, and certainly a diversity of skills in terms of guys that can hit for power, guys that have some speed, again, that they haven't really had in some time. So seems like a great fit. Cardinals are still trying to sell themselves to him, hoping that he stays more than 1 year, and I think right now Jason's probably buying what they're selling.
You think he might be the biggest number 2 hitter in history?
He has to be, right?
Definitely not Nelly Fox.
No. I mean, this guy, again, I've watched him many years on the field, but when you do see him in person, big guy. Maybe not necessarily your prototypical number 2 hitter, but I think what the Cardinals see in him is something with what they saw in Carlos Beltran a couple years ago when they made him a number 2 hitter, and that's why can't we have 2 so-called number 3 hitters and 1 hit number 2 and 1 hit third? You can put some power, you can put some different skills in that number 2 hole, maybe not the traditional type fit. But, again, certainly one Jason seems to be comfortable with, and the Cardinals like having him up there.
Yeah, you want to get your best hitters the most plate appearances, and that's certainly the way to do it. Jen, thank you very much. As always, joined by the inimitable Tom Singer, our man with the Buccos. Tom, how's the spring training going for you?
It's going good, thanks, Phil. It's going good for me, and it's going good for the Bucks. Things are looking pretty bright.
Well, right off the top, something I saw, I'm going to have to put the dreaded podcaster's curse on it because I don't know if this would ever happen. Somebody needs to contact Elias about this. Through the first 8 games of the spring, no errors. How do you play 8 spring training games in a row at any point in time without any errors? Must be tip of the bucko cap to the groundskeepers.
Groundskeepers, and also, it's an old cliche, but also the pitchers. They've been working very well, good, quick pace. I mean, it goes back to keeping your fielders on the toes. Typically in spring training, you might have one of those drag-out innings where the pitchers can't find a plate, and the fielders fall asleep. We haven't had any of that, so I think it's just the age-old, short pitching complementing, the short defense. We've seen a string of really well-pitched games. Obviously, in spring training, you use dozens of pitchers, literally, but they've all been working quick and working sharp, and as you said, that's made the guys in the field look sharp, too.
The pitching across the board has been good. You know, the Francisco Liriano debut, 3 innings, only 1 hit. Key move in the offseason, obviously, re-signing Liriano, getting him locked up to a 3-year contract. You know, when you look at the rotation, what would you really say Liriano's role is? Has he kind of been the backbone guy the last couple of years?
Oh, definitely. I would say, he's number one. You know, the fact that him being number one isn't obvious says a lot about just how the whole rotation has come along. In the past couple of seasons, Clint Hurdle would have had no problem whatsoever identifying his opening day pitcher. He knows who's going to be this time, too, but he's not saying publicly. But the point is, he's got three viable candidates to be the number one guy. And the fact that it's not so clear-cut just speaks well to the overall caliber of this rotation. But I would say, given his work ethic, Liriano is number one, and Gerrit Cole number two, AJ Burnett maybe slides down to number three, but Liriano is one of those guys that is definitely more appreciated in the clubhouse than maybe anywhere else because he's not terribly expressive. I mean, he's very cordial, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't talk as good a game as he pitches. The Pirates just like his focus, that look in his eyes when he takes the mound. It basically says that, the ball is in my hand, and when I let go of it, you're not going to do anything with it.
Yeah, I think he had to be very happy that the Pirates came and collected him again when he went out on the free agent market last year. It seems like such a good marriage. I've watched him a lot earlier in his career, and so hit and miss, and you got to give Ray Searidge and Clint Hurdle and everybody else around there credit for smoothing him out and finding some consistency there.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he's had some health issues. This is so far, like I said, let's not put jinx on him, but knock on wood, this is the first of the 3 spring trainings he's had with the Bucks, but he's been totally healthy and strong, no issues whatsoever. And that has a lot to do with, the pitching coach keeping a very close eye on him to make sure he doesn't get out of his comfortable delivery. His mechanics stay strong. And so far they have. And because we don't know what the market was telling Liriano in the winter before he did re-sign with the Pirates, but I would imagine this was a situation where he enjoyed pitching in Pittsburgh for Clint Hurdle and Ray Searidge. And on top of that, because the way they knew each other, the Pirates probably made the best offer to him financially, even in the offseason. So him coming back was a pretty easy decision for Frankie.
Well, it has to be a good sign, the starters, the pitching staff getting off to a good start because they've been adjusting to a new catcher with Russell Martin no longer there. Francisco Cervelli, who was identified as a good receiver and a good fit for Martin. How's it been watching Cervelli learning the pitchers and vice versa? From the outside, it seems it's been a nice, smooth transition to this point.
Well, yes, it has. Most of it has taken place out of sight. Frankie hasn't really caught that many of the pitchers in games. Tony Sanchez and Chris Stewart have actually caught many more innings in Grapefruit League games thus far than Cervelli has. But behind the scenes in the clubhouse, you know, he huddles up with the pitchers, has done most of the catching of them in the bullpen, you know, where you can obviously communicate more between pitchers and you can take your time in getting to know somebody, both on a personal level and also on a stuff level, you know, what they like to throw. And I think the pitchers have been most impressed by how Cervelli has taken time to spend a lot of time with them, you know, away from the actual battery connection, just making a personal connection with them in the clubhouse. And that has a lot to do with being in the same wavelength as your pitcher once the games do start.
Yeah, and one negative to that Pirates pitching staff early in spring training, the injury to Brandon Compton, who had that dreaded appointment with Dr. James Andrews, Tommy John surgery. He was kind of a sneaky, important depth guy there, it seemed like, last year, a guy that Clint Hurdle would go to when, you know, he needed, you know, whether it was a spot start or, you know, long out of the bullpen, and kind of an important guy. What does his injury do to the makeup of the bullpen?
Yeah, Brandon's a real he's a real bulldog. When you look at his numbers from last season, they are totally skewered by the fact that he had one horrible outing in Los Angeles where he was left out in the mound to eat up some innings and gave up like 10 runs in two innings. So other than that, he's a very dependable pitcher. Unfortunately, I think this impacts on a personal level Brandon himself more than perhaps the Pirates' depth on the staff, because they do have a lot of capable arms who can essentially fill that role that Compton had as the swing man, you know, the insurance for the rotation. Casey Sadler, who also made his major league debut last season, thus far has had a very strong spring. He's got the same makeup personality as Compton, you know, ironically. Nick Kingen, one of the top prospects, has yet to pitch the majors, but spent a lot of time in AAA last season, is another pitcher who could be one of the first responders if there's an emergency with your pitching staff. And, of course, you've got a couple guys who might open the season in a bullpen but have histories as starters, could be stretched out. Stormy Pimentel and Radamez Liz, the former Baltimore prospect, a couple hard throwers who essentially could fill the role that Jean-Marc Gomez did a couple years ago when he was so effective, both as a long reliever and as an occasional starter. So depth-wise, the Pirates can definitely compensate for the loss of Compton, but on a personal level, you know, you have to do your pull for the guy that, you know, he comes back well.
Yeah, it's always fun in spring training to watch and see every roster who's going to show up and push, try to create an opening when there might not be one. And it seems like Jeff Decker is the guy with the Pirates who is not just in the early games, but just from the first day he walked in the door this spring training is saying, I want to be in Pittsburgh. What's up with that?
Pretty impressive. He kind of made himself over. Right? Jeff was essentially looked at as the 26th man on the team, if you know what I mean. But he really committed himself in the offseason to sharpening his game all around. He slimmed down. He gained muscle. Did a lot of gym work. He's just showed up with a lot more of a pop in his bat. And what makes his potential role in the team so intriguing is that already there was no question that of the fourth outfielder candidates, he is by far the best defensively. He can play all three positions, including center. The only one the Pirates had last season to spell catch occasionally was Starling Marte, who moves over from left field, but this still creates a vacancy in the outfield. Decker can handle center field as well as the two-corner outfields, has a great arm. And the one thing that he's lacked in the past, some pop is bad, has shown up. So that makes a very interesting roster decision as we get near the season. And Decker basically is your Pepper Potts gamer. And when his skill catches up to his the energy with which he plays the game. That's a pretty compelling combination.
Yeah, and that the Travis Snyder trade kind of opens a door for somebody, whether it's Decker or Lambeau, one of the other candidates. Going to be interesting to watch that play out the rest of the spring training. And I'm wondering if you're spending a lot of time hanging around Frog Creek with relief pitcher Brad Lincoln. How's that going?
I've hung around with Brad, but not that Frog Creek where he's spending the spring training living in his trailer. Brad is one of, you know, former Pirates. They brought him back with a non-roster minor league deal. He looks well. He's throwing the ball well, but it's a pretty steep competition for that remaining seat in the bullpen, so we'll see how it pans out. I do think Brad should definitely have his own blog so we can refer to the Lincoln logs.
Perfect. But I don't know if we want our bosses to get any ideas about RV parks. That's probably not, that wouldn't be a good fit for us. Tom, thank you very much. As always, joined by Adam McKelvey, man about Maryvale. How you doing, Adam?
Oh, I'm good. Loving Maryvale.
Yeah, well, how could you not? Beautiful complex, maybe not in the exact heart of Old Town Scottsdale or those other trendy foo-foo areas of the Phoenix region. It's a working man's neighborhood and working man's team. Unfortunately, out of the gate, the Crew playing a bunch of ugly games, giving up a lot of runs and struggling in the field. I was just looking up the list of guys making errors, and no one culprit. They've been spreading it around. Concern just out of the chute? I mean, I know it's not so much winning these games, but just kind of the nature of them out of the gate for the Brewers.
Yeah, you're spot on, Phil. No one cares about winning or losing these games, really, when it boils down to it. But you do want to see clean games. You also are okay if you see some sloppiness right away. I mean, we see it from every team, but the Brewers have been playing very poorly early. And I'll tell you, some of these little post-game sessions with the manager, you know, Phil, and spring training, you just pop right on the field and you're getting the guy literally 30 seconds after the final out. And some of these have been a little raw with Ron Renicke. He's not happy necessarily with the way his club has played. And they do, in their morning meeting, talk about the previous day's game, things they did right, things they did wrong. And there have been some learning experiences. I'll tell you, one guy who has not played well in the field, which is a little surprising, is Scooter Gennett, their second baseman. He's an important player because he's going to go every day this year. And as he's come up to this Brewers team, he's actually been a little better defensively than the scouting report says. But he's struggling with these hard infields so far. And I know that they've been working with him a little bit and just talking with him to really focus on defense. It's very important to Ron Renicke, especially infield defense, and he wants them to play solid baseball. And, they finally got a win by beating the Reds in what was a pretty clean game. There was an error in there, but it was kind of a tricky play at first base. And I think the manager was feeling a lot better. Just getting one win under the belt, and now you can go forward.
Yeah, it's silly, the things we watch in spring training, but sometimes hard to miss when you're seeing the same team all the time. One guy that has been easy to miss, Francisco Rodriguez, K-Rod. It's been a while since I made it through Maryvale, and there was a discussion of that day of how long it would be till he arrived. Getting a visa from Venezuela is a little more complicated now than it was before the government travel restrictions. Any concern that he's going to miss too much of camp before he does make it to Maryvale?
No, Phil, they say no, and I think they point to last season where, again, Rodriguez signed late with the Brewers. It was into February. He arrived late because at that time there were political protests essentially surrounding his home in Caracas, and he physically couldn't leave. He eventually, with basically a military escort, was able to get out, get to the U.S., then remember, he stepped on the cactus outside his spring training abode, chasing down his young son last year, and was set back by a couple of hundred spines from a cactus jammed into his foot. So he had very little spring training last year, and the results kind of speak for themselves. 44 saves, a trip to the All-Star game, essentially unhittable in April. And he was absolutely no worse for the wear. So I think the Brewers are leaning on that experience, that this guy knows what he needs to do to be ready. He needs very little spring training action to feel ready, and he's got a nice setup in Venezuela that he's been doing his throwing and what he needs to do down there. So they're saying that this should be no problem. And, you know, and if he gets here, say, by the weekend, that's still more than 2 weeks before we go, before we head north. And the Brewers feel like that's plenty.
Hey, Ron Renicki's not yet named that opening day starter. It would appear to be a three-headed derby, maybe a two. I don't know. No, I'm going to say a three-headed between Peralta, Loesch, and Matt Garza. Who's your money on?
No, I mean, it's Loesch. The way they're lined up, it's Loesch. And they have him right now, Loesch, Garza, Peralta, Fires, and Nelson. And it should be Kyle Loesch. He's been, you know, steady money for 4 years now and really has revived his career. He's a really fascinating baseball player in that he'll tell you stories about him coming up with the Twins and then even on his time with the Reds, that he was sort of a hothead. And he was a stubborn guy. He was a hard thrower who would just muscle his way past hitters. Well, now he can't do that anymore, and he had that forearm surgery a couple of years ago in St. Louis, and now he is the ultimate pitcher. He works fast, he works smart, and he knows how to get guys out. I would give him the ball for any big game if I were a manager of any team. I love what he does. I love what he's done for this Brewers team. I think he's been a huge pickup for them the last couple of years in a clubhouse that really needed a guy with a little gravitas. He's brought it. So he's no doubt my opening day starter. Now, he's in the last year. If he goes, now you're down to Garza or Peralta. If Willie Peralta has another big year this year, you might want to give it to him because Matt Garza, you know, Phil, you saw those games in Chicago. There is nobody more emotional that I've ever seen on the mound in, as far as a starting pitcher than Matt Garza. I don't know how an opening day would go for him. It might be a really interesting experience.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of like every game's opening day for Matt Garza, so might be something. And we've talked about Garza as to me a key guy for the Brewers with Yovani Gallardo no longer there. Clearly counting on Matt Garza to be number one healthy and put together a 30 start 200 inning season and. You know, to stop being such a tease and really deliver the results. What's the early? What's he looked like in camp to this point?
Really great. He's one of the guys that he'll throw a bullpen and the catcher will raise his eyebrows. You know, look at you and raise his eyebrows and just sort of go, "Whoa." Slider's been good. He was not good in spring training last year, and he emphasizes this process that he has. You know, he sort of gave us the Allen Iverson. We're talking about practice. He got a little upset that his spring training results were being parsed unfairly in his view. So I think he's a guy where you throw out the Cactus League results, but in terms of the way he's throwing the ball, they really like what he's doing. And Phil, I agree with you, he's big, and I think you say that up and down this rotation because as we've talked about on this podcast, there is so little depth right now, and you know there's still time for Doug Melvin to address that by picking a guy off waivers, by making a little trade. Get a swingman type in here that can back up your rotation. Right now they are very thin in that area, so it's extremely important that the five guys that they've got ticketed give them the innings that they have banked. You know, for Garza, I think you're right to say, well, you know, I think 180 innings is a good number for Garza based on his history. But Willie Peralta has talked about wanting to be a 200-inning guy. That would be huge for this team. And then you go Fires, Nelson, your back-end guys. You know, can they get above 150, 175? You start adding up all those innings from your starters, and you could be in okay shape. You don't need five 200-inning guys, but you do need you do need health, and you do need them to be steady. And I think that's especially true of this team.
It's only been a couple outings so far, but there must be a lot of excitement about Tyler Thornburg and how he appears to have bounced back and ready to be a significant part of the bullpen.
Yep, it's so far so good. And we're talking about rotation depth. He's a guy to think about. He's been a starter. He's been a number one prospect as a starting pitcher in this organization. And if they're stretching him out a little bit this spring, assuming the elbow, which gave him trouble last year, holds up. So far, it's held up. And he's one of their plan Bs should something happen. So they'll continue to stretch him out. And you're right that the early results with him have been pretty positive. The other guy, Jim Henderson, is a big comeback player for them. And, the velocity is not there. I've kind of hesitated to report on it too much because the Brewers themselves say they're not even looking at velocities. They're not even looking at radar guns until March 15th. So I'm not, they don't believe that that's a factor just yet. But he's going to need a tick up in velocity from what he's showing in Cassis League games so far in order to be the effective reliever that he was in recent seasons. And he's a big depth guy for this Brewers bullpen.
And I'm pretty sure my old journalism teachers and yours would by now be screaming that we've buried the lead to the Brewers podcast, and I think they might be right. But Jonathan LaCroix, very quietly, kind of an old Jonathan LaCroix style, out of sight. He's been right front and center the last couple of years, but out of sight at the start of spring as he's worked his way back from that hamstring that seemed badly timed and might impact him for opening day. But now he's very close to getting back into game action. What's the outlook for him? It seems like he's going to get back very quick from this hamstring.
Yeah, so far, Phil, it's gone sort of the way he said it was going to go when he was, from the very beginning, downplaying the impact of this injury. He's done everything in their pregame and away from game activities, caught both ends. He's worked at first base on defense. He's worked with the catchers on defensive drills, your great pop-up drills that everybody loves so much. All he hasn't done is run the bases. And now he's to the point where he's going to get in minor league games, and the nature of those, he can go there, hit every inning in some inter-squad games, and if it feels like running to first, he'll jog to first. If he doesn't, it's inter-squad, and it's completely controlled, and there's no reason to run at all. You can just swing the bat. So he's going to see some pitching this week, try to get comfortable. He says he's really going to take it slow. He doesn't want to come back into a Cactus League game at 50%. He wants to come back much closer to playing the game the quote-unquote real way, the right way. So he, I think maybe it goes into next week a little bit, but we're not talking too far into next week. And I think we see Jonathan LaCroix in one of those Cactus League games, and that means he gets 2 weeks of spring training at bats, and they feel like that's going to be just fine. Some of this, K-Rod, LaCroix, Adam Lind's been out with a back issue, and they're not really worried about that. It shows you spring training is way too long. It's, I'm sorry to say this because it helps pay for all of us to be here, but it's become such a money-making exercise, and everybody agrees that it's way too long. There's too many games, I guess, besides the starting pitchers who need it to build up. But these are all kind of examples to me of, these guys really need 2 weeks to get ready, and here we're down for six.
Yeah, I don't know about 2 weeks. I think you might be a little ambitious there, and I know you didn't say that seriously.
How about 2 weeks of 2 weeks of games? But 2 weeks of games makes it more difficult to fund. Some of the way the stadiums are now. I hear more, Phil, talking to players about, boy, this is long, and we could really do something to shorten the regular season. Pull the postseason closer away from into October, away from November, and do some things by not playing so many spring training games. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it's something that you hear in clubhouses all the time.
I bet you will see a 154-game schedule in your lifetime, in my lifetime, and here's why. There's going to be a true World Series between the winner from Japan and the World Series winner. I don't know if it'll be a best of three, if it'll be a best of five, but eventually the money from two continents, mostly Asia, would be so big that that would fund the reduced schedule. So there you go. Just for as a reward for hanging in until the end of this Brewers podcast, I just solved the 154-game schedule. Thank you very much, Adam.
As always, joined by Mark Sheldon from beautiful Goodyear, Arizona. How you doing, Mark? How's spring training going?
It's going well. It's we've kind of hit the part where it's becoming more and more repetition and routine with the games are in full swing and guys are kind of getting extended and doing more and more things in camp.
Yeah, it's, you know, that time when it's starting to get the teams are making their first cuts but haven't really gotten to the hard stuff, and the newness is sort of worn off, and, you know, we're still looking around at some new players. And right off the top, a guy that seems to have made a really nice impression in the Reds camp, the high draft pick Michael Lorenzen, targeted to be a starter. Is he looking like a guy that could be maybe an express lane type guy to the big leagues and maybe a part in the bullpen too? What's up with him?
Yes, he's been impressing people here quite a bit. He was a 38th overall pick in 2013 and then moved up four levels his first professional summer. And then last season he made 24 starts at AA Pensacola and did very well. And they really like the fact that he's a quick learner, that he has great pitching stuff, but he's just very, very smart and he's been doing very well. And out here he's looked good in bullpens and in a couple of the games he's pitched. And although they project him as a future starter, which is not, he's really in the mix for one of the rotation spots this spring, but they do possibly see him as a guy that could still be developed as a starter, but also could be a long reliever and still get some innings in that way and in the major leagues and maybe make the team out of camp. They want to take their best 25 guys, and if he's one of them, they're going to take a hard look at that, whether he could be the guy. And the only thing they don't want to do, of course, is stunt his growth as a starter. Being that he's such a relatively new guy, he's a reliever in college. He doesn't have the giant workload of innings, so they got to be careful about building him up too fast and giving him too many innings. But maybe a bullpen spot could be a way to get him up here and get his contributions, but not overload him.
Yeah, we've certainly seen a lot of good starters, that do start their career pitching in middle relief out of the bullpen. Not a bad way to develop a guy. Doesn't mean he's going to be a reliever his whole career. But it brings up a point. A guy like that, Mark, if this was a development-type year for the Reds, you might be more cautious and just say he's going to go out to the minor leagues to start. In this National League Central, seems like now with the Cubs stepping up, every team in the Central seems like feels the urgency to win right now. Is that sort of a tangible aspect when in camp with the Reds, with Johnny Cueto in the last year of his contract, the veterans that are there, Joey Votto needing to bounce back from last year, Brandon Phillips, same kind of thing. I mean, just how tangible is that sense of, we can't waste a roster spot. We got to do everything we can to win every game, whether it's April, May, or September.
It's very tangible. Talked to guys here and there. I was just talking to Skip Schumacher, I think, yesterday, and, he's obviously in the last year of his contract here, but all he cares about is winning a World Series and going to the playoffs and other types of things. And you talk to Jay Bruce, he's very motivated after a really bad year, not only to have a better year for himself, but he wants to go to the playoffs. There's that sense, and I know you wrote about it, is that, you go back to 2012, is what a missed opportunity that was. And even, that they could have, buried the Giants and maybe gone on to bigger and better things like the Giants ended up doing when they won it all, and it didn't happen. And then you lose 2013 in the wild card, and, of course, 2014 was a disaster year. You got manager Brian Price, who's got to come back from last year's 76-win season. He wants to win badly. I can guarantee you that owner Bob Castellini wants to win very badly. I talked to him quite a bit over the years, and he is a very competitive person. He's not going to accept a rebuilding year. That's why they didn't trade Cueto and Chapman and other guys at the trade deadline last year. They absolutely want to win. So it's definitely a feeling here, and they're not going to concede games. And if that means – They have to bring one of their best prospects into the major leagues a little sooner than they expected because he's one of the best guys for their bullpen. They'll do it.
Hey, that brings up, if you reference a column I wrote when I was in Goodyear touring Arizona earlier, and I looked up the difference between the Cincinnati Reds and the Giants over the last 5 years in the regular season, three regular season wins is all the Giants have more than the Reds. And, you know, is there a sense within the clubhouse with the players that, you know, hey, people aren't taking us as serious as they used to, and that we're a great sleeper team, and that maybe this is a good way to go into a season without those high expectations and the same basic talent that was there always? You know, take maybe a Matt Latos away from that 2012 team, but, you know, same core.
It depends. I don't think a lot of guys worry too much about the expectations from outside the clubhouse. Like Jay Bruce, for instance, I asked him. He said, I flat out don't care what anyone thinks of the team. He only cares what the people on the team think. And then a couple other people, they realize that the team is kind of kind of viewed as underdogs, or they could be not really highly rated. And Brian Price has addressed it a couple times since the winter. He realizes that, and he's hoping that is a motivating factor. Hey, the people aren't taking you seriously, but you got to show them you're wrong. There's nothing better way, and it's been a tried and true practice in all sports over the years, that when you don't take a team seriously, or you give lower expectations, that team feels, you know, when I want to earn the respect and go ahead and win. It's been done for years, sometimes very successfully. So if that's an extra motivator for the Reds, then they should use that.
Hey, back to the team on the field. One setback early in camp was Devin Mesoraco being concussed, landed on that, or this time of the year, not on a concussion DL, but being held out with concussions. What's the concern there? Is there a thought this is just kind of a blip, or is there some concern? I mean, you do see it with catchers, certainly Avila with the Tigers. I mean, you see catchers that just the repeated concussions become a problem. Is this just sort of too early to get too concerned about it and just a bump in the road?
Yeah, I've asked about that. They're not too concerned. Obviously, they nowadays you have to take all head injuries very seriously, and they're certainly doing that with Mesoraco. They termed it a mild concussion, if that means anything. But he's had a couple before, and the one he had that was in 2012. He was in a collision with Cameron Maben of the Padres, and he missed quite a bit of time. That was a pretty tough one for him to come back from, and he didn't have a very good year that year. It was his rookie year. And then he took a foul tip when he was catching against Eric Kratz, I believe, from the Royals, was the guy that did it. But I will say he's been coming along fine. He took batting practice yesterday. Actually, right now, as you and I are talking, he's in the bullpen catching a bullpen session for one of the relievers. And he said he feels normal. They're going to have to do the final protocol that they have to do to get cleared. But right now, they feel like he could be back pretty soon.
And finally, the rotation. Give us an update on Homer Bailey and when it looks like he might be back, and the guys that are competing for those spots at the bottom of the rotation.
Homer Bailey is making progress. He's thrown now five bullpen sessions. He's reached about 50 pitches. He's been able to throw everything from fastballs to splits to sliders and everything like that. And so far, he's given thumbs up to everything. He hasn't had any setbacks yet, and they like the progress he's making. He's actually due on Saturday, the 14th, to have his first live BP session. That's the first of two. He's going to have another one a few days after that, and then they hope to get him in games. Obviously, it's going to put him behind, and it's not looking good that he'll be ready to open the season on the 25-man roster at this point. They may catch a little bit of a break because with all those off days in April, they could conceivably make him the fifth starter, in theory at least, and maybe they would skip one turn of the rotation from that, and then maybe they can get him in, maybe misses one or two starts in April, and then they can put him in. But they had two openings. This could be a third opening for someone else to make the team, and really they've had a pretty good competition to this point. Jason Marquez looked excellent. You've got Anthony Descalfani has done pretty well. Tony Cingrani hasn't been fabulous, but he had a pretty good first outing. His second outing was okay. Paul Mahalam has had a couple of good outings. He threw a lot of ground balls in his start. He got 8 of his 9 outs on the ground. David Holmberg had a good outing his last start. So there's different guys. Rysel Iglesias had a pretty rough first outing, but an okay second outing. So they're very pleased with the level of competition, but they also admit there's a long way to go before they can pick their rotation.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of games still to be played in the Cactus League, so we'll be watching to see as they get set. And look, thanks for talking with us, Mark. We'll be back next time, as always, joined by the well-tanned Kerry Muscat, enjoying that Arizona springtime. How you doing, Kerry?
Good, but using a lot of SPF 50, so let's be careful out there. It's been a little hot.
Yeah, exactly, and we can't forget where we come from in the Midwest, land of the indoor winter. But before we get one further second away from this, because it's probably already been a while, I want to go back to the moment with the back-to-back-to-back home runs by Jorge Soler, Javi Baez, and then Chris Bryant, the cherry on top. Obviously, those young guys doing that at the same time would have been impressive under any conditions. But those were massive blows, Gary. What can you just kind of regale us a little bit with the splendor of that moment?
I think when Soler hit his, we weren't sure if he'd hit it like all the way into to downtown Phoenix the way it was going. We were playing in Goodyear, so it was pretty strong. Apparently it bounced on the concourse. It didn't quite clear the ballpark, even though the guys all thought it cleared. So that was impressive. Then Bauer gets the 1-1 on Baez, and all of a sudden, boom, Baez hits one in the same vicinity, which was really scary. So we saw more fans were going towards left field as soon as Bryant came up. And what does he do? He hits an opposite field shot, which he said just scraped the wall, but it went beyond the wall, so it scraped the far wall in that tunnel. So it was really impressive to see. I think some of the guys were razzing Wellington Castillo because he came up next and just had a single. Of course, Castillo came through about the sixth inning and did a home run. It was fun to watch. Like, apparently, the Indians razzed Bauer a little bit the next day and had some policemen deliver three baseballs, saying that they were the ones that the players had hit, and that they had created some issues and they were going to fine Bauer. And he took it all in good stride. So, as he put it, the hitters need to have a little fun. According to the Iowa Cubs people, they had never done that in the nine. They were only together for 9 games at Iowa, but they had never hit back-to-back-to-back like that. So this was a first. And I know that Cubs fans, judging from the response on Twitter and everywhere else and social media, Cubs fans were very giddy.
Yeah, I know it was maybe the first, but Cubs fans will hope not the last time that happens with all those guys. Definitely a statement moment of spring training. And did anyone mention it happened to come in a loss?
Well, yes. Fortunately, Madden and the Cubs finally got their first win with a win over the Dodgers, so he's off the schneid there. But Joe's been a little upset about some of the play. There have been some mental mistakes. Fundamentals have not been good. And they did some extra drill work before their game against the Dodgers, which they won. And Joe made sure that the drills were done right. You know, he can tolerate certain physical mistakes, but the mental mistakes he won't tolerate. And it's nice to hear the manager. He didn't really call the guys out, but he did make sure that they got the message.
Yeah, I think from the outside, it's easy to look at the names that have been the Baseball America names that have been so prominent, the last couple of years, last few years in some cases, and you just almost want to, you can write guys into your lineup cards and make make plans. But the fact that, this really isn't by any means a set team, and it's a team where a lot of guys are trying to step up for the first time. It sounded a little bit like Joe Madden thought guys were maybe a little bit too concerned about their own individual play and not yet really weaving it into a team concept.
Well, I'm not sure if guys are concerned you know, saying that they're concerned about their individual play makes it sound like they're a little selfish. I think what he's saying is they're concerned about making the team and making a good impression. Now, this is, for some of these kids, this is their third manager in 3 years. You know, and you tend to forget that. And they're all trying to say, hey, I want him to notice me, and I want to do good. And maybe they're just pressing a little too much. And then we also have new players in the roster that are also trying to make a good impression. One thing fans kind of need to remember, and any of us that are too harsh in terms of criticism, is that the lineups have been different pretty much every day, because it's not a matter of trying to find the right lineup now. It's just a matter of Madden trying to see the guys and evaluate them. So Rizzo isn't playing every day. You know, Brian's playing every other day kind of thing. It's a matter of them still sort of getting to know each other. And I think once they figure all that out and they get a set lineup towards later in spring, then it'll be a little better performance.
Yeah, it is always a good thing to check that calendar and see it's March 12th. And,
True.
I know Joe Madden put himself out there a little bit by saying he also, you know, he likes his teams to win in spring. But it's always that, you know, last week or 10 days coming out of spring training, you know, I think it matters to the managers and the general managers. You want to hit stride. You know, this is the time of the spring for guys to kind of put themselves out there and get noticed. Wondering though, one thing with Javier Baez, despite being in that three pack of magnificent there, as we talk, he's 1 for 11 this spring. And you know, I know that numbers don't show how many of those were hard hit balls or good at bats. But is second base his job, or does he have to do something to win it? I know it seems like there've been. Well, Stello's been moving around some, and Alcantara moving around. It certainly seems it's still Javi Baez's job, and a very, very strong hold on it anyway.
Well, I know at the end of last season, one of the things that Theo Epstein had said was that they projected Baez as their second baseman, and then that message sort of changed a little bit in January, where they wanted to make sure that the players knew that they had to earn the job, that it wasn't just going to be handed to them. I think Javi responded well by he lost a lot of weight. He showed up in great shape. It hasn't affected his power, obviously. And he's been working very hard at second. I don't think the defense is the problem. It's really getting him to relax at the plate, getting him to shorten up a swing, getting him to not strike out as much, getting him to, you know, some productive outs. He has been hitting the ball really hard right at people. I wouldn't say it's his – I wouldn't say anybody's job is set in stone, except, you know, the obvious guys like the Rizzos and Castro and Dexter Fowlers and those kind of people. They do like – what a guy like Tommy La Stella can do. For example, you know, he gets a walk. He goes from first to third on a single by Valleca and then scores the winning run on a sac fly. That's a little tiny thing, but that's huge. That's the kind of things that Madden's really emphasizing, just that running from first to third on the play. So it's, you know, things like that stand out. Javi's got to get better, and he knows it. And I think that having Manny Ramirez, we've talked about this before, having Manny here has helped him a lot.
It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if he goes to AAA. You know, I mean, a lot of great players came up and went back. Look at Mike Trout, his start with the Angels. So it certainly happens all the time. A lot of spotlight on guy like Baez.
Well, it happened to Rizzo too. They did that with Rizzo too. So,
yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. After the crazy success of AAA, you know, came up and couldn't duplicate it with the Padres. Kerry, we'll be talking about the fifth starter situation a lot, I know, as spring goes on. But right now, looking at guys that won't be in that mix, some of the young guys that are getting chances to pitch that will probably be sent out later in the spring. Wondering what, just kind of first glance at guys like Pierce Johnson and C.J. Edwards this spring.
Johnson pitched well, although, to be very honest, I missed seeing it because we were down in the clubhouse getting one of the starters, so I missed that one. C.J. was dazzling. He came in for one inning, struck out the first two batters he faced and got a ground out to the third. And for him, it was night and day compared to his spring start a year ago in Peoria when he admitted that he was really nervous. This was really pretty impressive. He looked very calm and composed for a young kid, and I think he handled it really well. Johnson, I like Johnson a lot. I'm hoping that they keep him in camp a little bit longer, but I know they'd also like to get him stretched out too. With Edwards, they're going to be careful with him in terms of innings so that they don't overwork the shoulder, because he had those problems last year, so they're just being cautious.
And couple of hitters that are fringy guys, I'm sure, trying to win spots. They've been in at Wrigley Field before, but it seems like Junior Lake and Matt Caesar have both kind of gotten themselves off the good starts that might kind of keep them in the mix longer, depending on how the roster is set up.
Yes and no. There have been some defensive lapses by Lake that have been pretty glaring, and that's one of the reasons for some of the drills that they had the other day. Caesar's a great defensive player. I mean, that guy is—he just has a super Caesar moment almost every game that he's in. But he needs to show he can hit, you know, and that's his thing. I think those positions are still to be determined.
Yeah, as we talk, Matt Caesar doing what he can about that, 4-for-11, and he's hit for the cycle this spring, double, triple, homer, stole the base. Certainly a guy seizing the opportunities he's getting. And lastly, there was a transaction since our last podcast, the addition of not diminutive left-hander Phil Koch, and seems like that was, as you look at the 2015 team, if it's set up to win as many games as possible, there was certainly some uncertainty from the left side in the bullpen. What's your take on the addition of Phil Koch?
Well, I don't think he'd be here. They'd have him if they weren't feeling a little short on the left side. I kind of like Zach Roska, but they usually don't listen to me. But Koch is here with the experience. He's worked very hard this offseason, he said, to kind of get back on track. Came out to the complex here, walked around the yard with Theo, talked to him, and then agreed to a minor league deal. If it is just a minor league deal, there are obviously incentives, and he'll earn about $2 million if he makes the major league team. But it's a veteran. It's something they need, that experience in the pen. They still have a lot of the kids, you know, with Grimm and Ramirez and Stroop and Rondon. So having him down there would be good. You know, their other left-handed options include Britton, Joseph Ortiz, and I'm going to forget one, and then Roskopf. So they're still sort of sorting those guys out. Roskopf had pitched a really good ninth inning in the win against the Dodgers, and I've always kind of been he's been a favorite of mine. So I think it'll just come down to let's wait till as the spring progresses and see what they do.
Yep, sounds good. Well, Kerry, enjoy the day, enjoy the rest of the week, and thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. This is Phil Rogers. This has been MLB.com Extras, NL Central Edition.